Alrighty, great. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Brandy McClelland, and I am the Student Senate President. I would like to welcome everyone to our semi-annual Town Hall Forum. I would first like to share my appreciation to the panel and their participation in our forum and continuous support for students. I would also like to thank the Residence Hall Association, specifically Fez Kabani, who is the president of the Residence Hall, for their support by bringing their forum to ours. We're very excited to have the opportunity to audio record tonight's Town Hall Forum. Similar to previous forums, tonight's recording will later be made available as a podcast for students who are unable to attend this evening. Your voluntary participation is assumed consent to this recording. I encourage you all to take advantage of this time and ask the faculty and administrators any questions you may have about TWU. Stephen Jones, Vice President of the Student Senate, and Anastasia Zachary, Senator for the College of Arts and Sciences, will lead the questions. I would like to invite Dana Manning to the podium to introduce our Student Senate.
Good evening, everyone. I'm going to introduce the Executive Board for the Student Senate and the Senators. First, we have President Brandy McClelland, President Pro Tem Stephen Jones, Secretary Consuelo Tinajero, Treasurer Mallory Caldwell, Academic Affairs Chair Chantel Hill, and I'm the Student Affairs Chair. We have Public Affairs Chair Mariana Anaya and our advisor Jimmy Renfro. From the College of Arts and Sciences, we have Anastasia Zachary, Rashandra Haywood, Maggie Ongel, Vernella Verdell, and from the College of Nursing, we have Francesca Edwards. From College of Health Sciences, we have Joseph Santiago, Kathy Lee, Tiffany Lynn, and Brandon Knox. From the College of Professional Education, we have Farron Brown. From the Residential College, we have Amy Doyle and Keith DeLinta. From the Commuter, we have Jacoby Stewart. And from non-traditional, we have McKellanie Rayford and Tanisha Robertson. And now I will introduce McKellanie Rayford, and she will introduce our panelists. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to take this time and recognize our distinguished guests. We have Dr. Judith Bean, Associate Vice President for Undergraduate Studies. We have Dr. Richard Nicholas, who is Vice President of Student Life. Dr. Monica Mendez-Grant, Associate Vice President, Student Life. Rob Placido, Associate Vice President, Information and Technology Services. We have Chief John Irwin, Department of Public Safety. Beth Lewis, ID Systems and Contracted Food Service Administrator. Also tonight we have Nancy Murphy Chadwick, Director of University Housing. Kyle Voiles, Director, Student Union, and Director for the Center for Student Development. Amy O'Keefe, Director of Commuter and Non-Traditional Services. Heather Speed, Dean of Students. John McRae, Director, Aramark. John Sissick, Director, Fitness and Recreation. We have Governor Jackson, Director of Financial Aid. And Harold Johnson, Associate Vice President, Facilities Management and Construction.
Accounted for?
No, Harold's not here.
Oh, well, everyone was named that is here. Okay. We are now going to begin with the question answer portion of the forum. Thank you.
Welcome again, everybody. My name is Stephen Jones. I'm the President Pro Tempore. And I also just wanted to start by saying if anybody has any questions, you can definitely write them down on the slip that you got when you first walked in. And you can hand it to the people that are standing on the side over here, and they'll take them for you. The next thing I was going to say is I first want to start it off by opening it up to the audience. Does anybody first want to ask any questions? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. You can stand up and ask your question.
How long Hello. I don't know who this would be directed to, but I had a question about if I'm having trouble with one of my professors, and I've already went to that said, the head person at the, like, computer science department. Thank you. Who do I go to, because it hasn't been handled yet? Who do I go to after that?
You should have been given, as you were trying to attempt the problem resolution, a form that showed you the list of people to go to. Usually it would be the dean of the college after the department chair. And then there's another step. You can keep going as long as it takes to resolve the problem. But make sure you're using the appeal form, and it will guide you.
If I didn't receive that, If I didn't receive the form that has the names on it, because I didn't receive that. So who do I go to?
You can contact the Office of Academic Affairs or my office, which is the Office of Undergraduate Studies.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does anybody else have any more questions that they want to ask? Okay. I'm going to go straight into this. Oh, you have one? Okay, go ahead.
As a student organization on campus, why is there not a more clear, concise way for students to find out information in reference to room reservations for on-campus facilities such as the MCL, Hubbard Hall, etc.? Online, there is not an updated list for prices, for microphones, chairs, etc. There's no way that we know this information, so we're just trying to figure out a better way to schedule events here on campus.
I'll do my best. We don't have anyone here from conference services tonight, and that's who would schedule all these type of events. I can answer for the union if you want me to address any of that within the union, but it's okay. We can definitely take this issue to David Sweeten, who is the director there, and find out, you know, if there's not anything that's updated on the web that needs to be corrected, and that's an easy fix for us. I know that union / conference services, just last week we met with an outside agency that is going to look at helping us do some online reservations to kind of clear up some processes, because one of the problems we've noticed lately is double bookings in the union, and I'm not talking about conference services, but we've had some problems there, and I know it's caused a couple of concerns with student groups, and we're trying to clear that up, and that online edition would really help in that process. And ITS, we met with them, has sent some people over to help us with that process too. So, and conference services was a part of that meeting and met with the vendor as well. But we'll bring that to their attention.
Yeah, man. Maya Bangor for Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated here on campus. And my question is directed towards, as a student organization here on campus, we do a lot of reservations. And it's kind of hard being a student and trying to raise money for your organization and trying to make sure that you address the concerns of students on campus as far as programming is concerned. We do a lot of public service work here on campus. For instance, we had our Hip Hop in America debate, which was about 2 weeks ago in the MCL auditorium. This was a very good event that we had. We had a lot of school participation, but it also cost us a lot of money to have that event here on campus. So my question would be, exactly how is there a possibility in which students can get, like, a discounted rate for reservations or for officers, or is there any way we can work that out? We spent a lot of money for security here on campus, and I would not like to disclose the amount of money we spent, but it was a lot of money for security over the course of a week. And our organization, we're geared to continue to do programming, but we would like to know exactly, is there any way we can get assistance with getting for security or for reservations or anything like that?
Who would like to take this?
Okay. Kyle and I think, can answer this, and maybe a little bit with John Irwin. I think John can address the officer situation, but I think that there are some ways that I know things cost, and it's only getting more expensive to do programming. Our offices do programming, so we're aware of that. I think one of the things to do is try to be creative as much as you can. The House of Representatives has a fund that you can tap into if you're a registered organization to be reimbursed. I think there might be some co-sponsorship opportunities that I don't think are explored as much with the Center for Student Development, CAB, and groups like that. You know, as the economy is getting a little tighter and a little tougher, I think we're all going to be looking at ways we can be creative, whether it's a student group or a division on campus, to see how we can stretch those dollars. So I think we're all kind of in that same boat and would love to explore opportunities where we could latch on to you guys, because you guys have great ideas, great programming. You've got the people who will come out to the event. So I think that's something that we can do more, is try to reach out to groups who are involved, who know how to do an event, so we can share those dollars better.
One thing I could add, Maya, is that in the middle of a fiscal year, sometimes it's hard to stop with what we're doing with programming and put money towards something else. And so we have just finished our budget process for next year. And so one thing that the union is going to do, we're going to be actually co-sponsoring with CAB on a big event next year. And so what could really help with is, as you're doing your long-term planning, if you could come up with something, you know, like what I'm saying is, like, if you ask me in December, can you help with February, the answer is probably going to be no, just because of the money's all even allocated for that year. But for next fiscal year, now's the time to be kind of be thinking and helping with some of that planning, and we could, you know, jump on board and maybe do some co-sponsorships.
Sure. And I may be able to answer another piece of your question, that for student organizations, the university does provide some services and facilities for free. There are some we cannot provide for free. When there is a direct cost, when an officer works extra time, or when custodians, for example, are required to come clean up after an event, that isn't free. We cannot use state funds, for example, which is most of our money, on behalf of a student organization to do a social event. It's just not permitted. So we do understand student organizations, and just like our departments, if it wasn't a student group, if it was one of our departments putting on a program, they get to use facilities for free, but there are some things that are not free when there's what we call a direct cost associated with it. There's no one to pass it on to, and there's no fund to go to pay for it to make it free or discounted for you.
Thank you.
My question was that a lot of the events that my sorority puts on, that's Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, we put on a lot of public service programs that we don't spend any money. We don't get any money back from it. It's not social, so it's that we're giving money out. So with those type of programs, is there any way that the school could incorporate us doing public service or something to that extent? I'm saying to explore more options to helping student organizations, since we pay to come here and then we come and we do work. I mean, like, it's not that we really are doing work, because the students have something to do and whatnot.
And
so, I mean,
the answer, whether the event is social or public service, isn't the reason why there's a cost attached to it. Mm-hmm. The answer is the same. I mean, there may be ways to find more co-sponsorships, yeah, raise the money, find more creative ways to help with the funding, and I understand that. The fact that we must charge for some things isn't based on the nature of the event. Mm-hmm. It's not like if you're having a dance, you pay a price, and if you're doing a service event, you don't. That's not an option we have on many of our facilities.
Okay.
The state makes very clear distinctions between academic facilities and the union, for example. Students pay for the union. There's a great deal more we can do because you're already paying for that building. Mm-hmm. But even though you do pay tuition to go here, the state doesn't allow us to use that for those kind of events.
Yeah. And I was, and my other, just one more thing with Kyle. When is the meeting, is there a meeting that organizations have with the student union office to actually talk about co-sponsorships, or is that something that you come and do individually?
I would say your first point of reference would be Christy Raines in the student union office. She is our coordinator of programming. She'd be the person to help there. In CSD, if you're looking for somebody, I would suggest either Lindsay Hatter, Aaron Lantzman, or Zach Shirley, and one of those three people could help you with that. And also, can I get your first question? Would you hand that to me in writing afterwards, the one that dealt with conference services? And if you can just get me a copy of that at a later time, I'll pass that on.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't get it word for word.
Well, and I just wanted to add something. I don't have any solutions for you, but I wanted to acknowledge the effort that y'all make. And we know what a great difference that y'all make on our campus, and we don't want you to stop. And so that's why I wanted to extend the Center for Student Development, you know, in other places for y'all to explore, to try to be creative, because you do. You help our campus. You bring a lot to our students, and wanted to publicly address the great things that y'all do for us.
There are opportunities where we can help groups raise money if we know far enough advance. Kyle's correct that the health fair, for example, that the data set a good year in advance, and we actually found some businesses and companies that invested money to help the sponsoring groups offset the cost that they incurred, some of the giveaways for students, the cost of the facility itself. There's times when there's other people out there, it's getting harder by the day in this economy, but there are people who will help us with that. We've had sponsorship for some of the lectures on campus. The Awesome Intercultural Services and the big conference they just held had some sponsorships that otherwise they would be paying those costs too. We actually pay them ourselves, in some cases, to ourselves, if you can believe it. That's the joy of being a state agency.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any more questions out in the audience? We definitely want to encourage questions from the audience, so please don't be afraid.
I tend to stay here. I'm a commuter, but I actually stay here really late every night in the library. And when I leave, a lot of the lights are out, and some of the places, I don't park in where I used to park last semester because it was so dark back behind the swimming pool back there. I mean, it was like, it's a little frightening back there, but I don't even park there anymore. But who do you talk to? I mean, I've passed it along to officers or whoever when the lights are out, but who gets those? Who do you talk to, you know, when, I don't know if y'all do patrols to see if they're out or anyway, but.
Facilities, actually. Excuse me.
Okay. Do y'all do like a run once a week or once a month?
I'm very soft-spoken.
Okay.
Facilities actually is responsible for doing that. We, the police department, we do a campus-wide light survey once a month. They also do a campus-wide light survey within their department once a month. And it is really, I mean, you can go out any night and you can find lights out. That's just the nature of the beast. We try to keep the lights on. If you have any areas that you see that there's a large amount of lights on, you know, one is one thing, and we want to keep them on. But if you have a whole string of lights, if you'll call after dark, obviously, call our dispatcher at 2911 and tell them where that is. It's possible it's just a circuit that has been thrown or something like that. And it may be a fairly easy fix. But overall, the lights, the surveys that we do have been really very good, relatively speaking, with the number of lights we have on this hill, which is a lot. It is. It really is.
And since facilities isn't here, to add one piece to it, we keep adding lighting. I mean, the issue of a single light that's out that has burned out, and you can help us by reporting it. John's right. Once in a while, something goes wrong and a whole row of lights or a whole circuit goes out. That we definitely, the police may see it, maintenance staff may see it, but if you do, you report it at night to the police, during the day to student life or to facilities. But we are adding more. We actually do evening walkthroughs, and we watch as student pedestrian pathways change you know, we change our landscaping or a building is changed or construction starts, the pathways change. There is a sidewalk plan where we are constantly updating or adding sidewalks. You know, on university campuses, one of the ways to know how to have your sidewalks is to leave it bare for a while and see where the pathways develop, and then you pave it. And we do that with lighting also. When the Lowry Woods apartments were added, that changed the pathways, and we added lights, and we are still adding lights. We add some every year. And facilities develops that plan. It's certainly appropriate. If you're walking somewhere on a regular basis where there isn't a light, that's a different issue, and we need to know that.
Well, we'll just take this one last question, and I'm going to switch the form around. Okay. So we're going to start with the questions. The first question is, there has been several students concerned regarding a perceived lack of legibility to get in contact with their advisors. What can be done about this issue with the child development, occupational therapy, and the social work?
Oh, you don't want to
hold it. Okay.
You want to stand up?
That's okay.
I'm always pleased that students are looking for advisors. Go, do it. In fact, you may see posters soon all over campus urging you to go to your advisor. It's extremely important that you do so, and don't let anybody tell you that you don't have to be advised. You need to be advised, and departments and faculty want you to be advised. The problem is with the departments that faculty are not there 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. They're teaching classes. They're preparing, but they usually always have office hours. So the first thing that a student needs to know is, what are the office hours? Where's the first place you're supposed to see those? Anybody know?
Syllabus.
You got it. 100 for you. Another place. There's three places. Let's see if you can get all three. The second one is, anybody? Online. Yay. One more place. The department office. If your faculty member is a math, you go to the math and computer science department, and they'll have a roster of every faculty member and all of their office hours. So the student's responsibility is to try to connect with that advisor during those office hours. Hey, what if the schedule conflicts? What would you do? Go to the department office and say, you know what, I probably need a different advisor because my class schedule, I'm in class when this person's office hours are. Could you reassign me? So that would be one thing. The websites are extremely helpful. One of the departments mentioned was OT, but you probably know that OT is not an undergraduate major, right? You knew that. So they don't do undergraduate advising. So how do you find out? Well, as it happens, their website is very explicit on things like prerequisites, gives the name and the fax number of who to contact about that. So you really need to use the websites. Departments are putting more and more there all the time. Like Family Sciences does it, OT does it, Social Work does it. I checked this afternoon, got their web pages with me. They are pushing this information out to the web. So the web, the department office, and your syllabus are the three places to find that contact information. Well, let's say you've tried. You go back to the department chair. They can light a fire under the faculty member, or the department chair can himself or herself do your advising. And if all else fails, go to the college and talk to the college advisors. There's always somebody that wants to help you, and so does my office, the Office of Undergraduate Studies.
Just so there's no confusion, these are questions that were pre-submitted during the peak hours of lunch from students who couldn't make it or some of you that are here today. And we will also get back to the open forum after we get through some of these questions. So, okay, thank you. The second question is, a lot of the instructors who teach the science labs have difficulty understanding, the students have difficulties understanding the language barrier. How can we help this problem?
Anybody?
Well, you asked the wrong person because I did a lot of scholarship and research in dialects and languages, and I know that, you know, those New Yorkers sound funny, and there's just no helping them. What can you say? So, you know, no matter whether you travel abroad or go across different regions in the U.S., there may be some people you can't understand that live in the U.S. So if you have a foreign-born lab advisor, the first thing you do is kind of whisper in their ear, "Instructor, could you please slow down a little bit? I'd appreciate it. I'm having difficulty understanding." So, and then during class, again, respectfully and politely, but raise your hand and could you repeat that, please? It's very simple. Just ask them to repeat and to slow down.
That this question comes up periodically, and there's a difference between simply having a little difficulty understanding somebody whose language is different or whose accent is heavy. First, you should assume they're having an equal amount of difficulty understanding you. And then, as Judith said, certainly call it to their attention. You're paying tuition to be there, and if just like anybody else, ask for a repetition. If there is a problem, if the person involved doesn't want to do that, then that's a different level of problem. And then you would go to the supervising instructor or the department chair and say, this really is a problem. And unfortunately, as my office has been involved in some of these, a group of students will come in about 12 weeks into the semester and say, I've been having a problem for 12 weeks. And there's not much we can do at that point. This issue should come up early. And this is clearly one where you should not be afraid to contact the instructor or complain if that's what the issue is.
All right. Next question is, can we put more food options in the garden room? Some of the heat off of you.
With most things on campus, a lot of times it comes down to space, and there's definitely things we can do as far as adding variety. One of the things that we like to hear back from you guys is more specific suggestions as opposed to just more variety. So if there's something specific you want, then feel free to bring that to my attention. If you go to our website, there's a contact us button for the food service website that goes straight to my email address. So if you have something specific that you're interested in, definitely send that to us. And if there's a way we can work it in, I mean, you guys have been up there at lunch. You know it's jam-packed, crowded. If there's a way we can work it in, you know, we'd be glad to give it a try. So, again, if there's something specific, shoot me an email or just come by the office and have a chat with us, and we'll see what we can do to broaden that variety for you.
Thank you. Okay. Has there been any consideration to build a breast pumping room in the new rec facility?
Is we're at the point, can you hear me or do I need the mic?
Mic.
No, I'm going to try not to yell into the mic. We're at the point with the new fitness center where we know what it's going to look like, we know what's going to be in it, and we think we know what everything's going to cost. And we are at the limits of what we can afford with the new fitness center. I have the drawings here with me. They're a little bit bigger than a sheet of paper, so if I hold them up, nobody's going to be able to see them. You're going to see poster boards in the fitness center in the chancellor's office soon about this, and I'm going to present about this to the Board of Regents on Friday. So we're kind of at the point where it's getting too late to put anything else in there now because we're at the limits of what we can afford, which is good because we're not charging you a fee and then building you something really tiny that doesn't have anything in it. I think Kyle was going to follow up on this as well.
I've actually, this same topic has come up in the union. I've actually talked with members of the LASSO, and I think a student came to visit with me, and I think I referred her to the Senate. Has it come to the Senate, Brandy, yet? Okay. For our Dallas campus, I know that doesn't help you here, but our Dallas campus, with the new building that we're building there, we're actually creating a room just for that purpose, for nursing mothers. And so we're really excited about that because we think we're going to break ground and hopefully that we can set a precedent that we can do on the Houston campus and here down the road. John mentioned earlier with Aramark, it's a space issue. And we are exploring options on campus at this time. We're looking at everything to figure out, is there a possibility to create somewhere here on this campus to do that? I don't have an answer for that yet. In the union, and I want to be clear about this, we do not have a room specifically designated for this, but we have allowed nursing mothers to utilize a staff restroom that is off the beaten path. It's not. It's a lot cleaner than the normal restroom because it's only utilized by a few people. It does have a countertop, electrical outlets, a chair, and it can be locked from the inside so that nobody else can enter that room for privacy's sake. And so we have allowed. We've had a student last year that used it regularly. We have had a couple of students that have come and started using the room again this year as well. And so, and if you have students or if you know of students that have that need, if you'll have them contact the student union office, we'll help them out.
This one is a nice one. I just wanted to take a moment and thank all of you, the administration, for the hard work you do. Your leadership and willingness to work towards solutions with students make you positive contributors to the university and to humanity.
Okay, now we're going to open it back up to the floor. We would love to hear what you have to say.
So every time we have one of these, and by the way, I commend you, every session gets bigger. It's just great. I mean, a year ago we had maybe, 10 people in this room, so it's really exciting. I work for technology services, and I saw a question that wasn't asked, so I'm going to kind of tell on myself. Because it comes up every time, that indicates to me that we're not doing it right, so we haven't fixed it in between the times you guys have brought it up. So with the Senate's permission, I'm going to do something a little different. I'd like to pass this out. What I'm passing out is a map of the campus. This is regarding wireless. It's got to be on somebody's mind, right? This shows you where our wireless locations are. Each one of those locations has multiple wireless devices. Just to give you an idea, there might be two or three for each one of the little yellow stars that you're going to see. And they cost around $1,500 a piece. So we don't sprinkle them around loosely because money is tight. We work with the Senate to determine where the best locations are, and that has worked really well in the past. But there may be some that you would like to voice your opinion on, maybe a lounge that you regularly use your laptop and you don't have wireless there. So if you'd put your email address up in that little box and kind of describe the location that you would like the wireless device in, the Senate, hopefully they'll agree to this, but we'll collect those, and then we'll review them and see if there's funding to do it. The other half of this is, I'll just stop you now if you're writing dorm rooms in there. Dorms is different funding. That doesn't mean I'm begging off on the issue. Chuck Thetford, Nancy Murphy Chadwick, and my staff are working on surveying the dorms so that we can get wireless. The problem with the towers is you can't put one device in and it serves a big area. You have to have one on every floor. So times $1,500, and that's eventually ends up costing you more tuition. So we're very stingy with your money. If it's a big need and you all say that this has to happen and Nancy can get funds for the housing portion, it's something that we want to do. The rest of the campus besides the dorms, mark on the map, tell me the description in the box, and then we'll see what we can do. Does that sound good? Thank you.
My question is addressed to food services. I'm just wondering, why do we have the places that we have? Why is there not, like, I've been to other colleges, and they have, like, Taco Bell, Panda Express, Subway, and I understand we have the variety of that food, but why do we not have, like, the brand names, I guess, is what I'm just wondering.
When you start looking at national brands on college campuses, one thing you look at is the population of the campus and will it support that national brand. You know, obviously we have Chick-fil-A here. Other schools have Taco Bells, Subways, Panda Expresses, things like that. All of those national brands require a certain level of sales to be able to go into a location. So the more national brands you have, you're spreading out the dollars between those. So it's difficult to meet those standards that they put in place. Not saying we won't put any more national brands in the future, but right now, at least in the student union, really the Chick-fil-A is the only one that's that location is the only real viable option. But that is something we're looking forward to in the future. And as we move farther south on campus and start to get more toward the commuter student population and things like that, that's something that could come online. But that's the main thing. It really is a volume issue.
This is directed to, I guess, food services. Why isn't the hours on the underground more flexible than what it should be? Because they only have about, I guess, the times that people have to eat, they're usually closed. And so I was just wondering why they aren't more flexible.
A little bit of a cold. The hours at the underground are open, have been set that way for a couple of years now, and those were based on traffic patterns and when students were coming in and out. Breakfast, you know, over about 9:30, and then lunch opening up, excuse me, 11 o'clock to 2, and then closing down, and then opening back up in the dinner time. That being said, there's something open on campus all day long. So whether it not be, you know, if you have to eat at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the underground may not be an option, but the garden room, Chick-fil-A, and things like that are open. Again, that's always something we can look at, but there's always a cost associated with that. Every hour we stay open longer, that's an hour we have to keep staff there. That's an hour longer we have to keep food out. And so, it's a cost associated with it and how many students would utilize the service. And if that's something that we get enough people on board with and they'll utilize the service, then that's something we can look at changing. But the hours that were set right now, it was based on the traffic patterns and the students and the class schedules at the time. Could be something we need to look at, you know, moving forward. But that's the basic answer there.
John answered that, and I want to add one piece to that, just so we're clear. The flexibility, I mean, altering the hours a half an hour here or a half an hour there, we can do almost any time. That's an issue to take to student government or the Senate or Residence Hall Association and let them advise us on it. If students really want it a little different, we move it. When you talk about adding, you're adding cost. If you say keep it open an hour longer than it is now, that's utilities, it's staffing, it's cleanup, and that means higher prices, which means you as students or student government have to tell us essentially we're willing to pay more to have a longer schedule. Food service is a break-even operation. It has to be. There's no state money in it. There's no university money in it. Your tuition does not go to it. It is self-supporting. The people who eat there on a meal plan or buy retail in the garden room, that's the money that makes it work. So if you say, we want to stay open an hour longer and we've got to have three staff, they earn wages, you know, the lights have to be on, we figure out the cost and we add it to the food cost. There's no subsidy in this whatsoever. So it's a very good question, and it's a good question to take to student government, let them survey residents or survey retail customers and say, just like the question about variety, what is it you would like? We can do that. And if there's more cost, you can advise us about it.
Okay, we're going to switch the program once again. We want to get some of the questions that you written down on the sheet of paper answered. So the first question is there going to be more ramps built for the handicapped people? If I've noticed that there is only one per entrance.
Okay. Part of the answer to that question is the same as the sidewalk thing I said earlier. There is a master plan for campus traffic, including ramps. Every building we have now is sufficiently ramped to meet the federal requirements for ADA and for handicap access. That doesn't mean that we might not be in a position to add more. And I'm sorry facilities isn't here because they could tell you if there's one more or two more or three more in the plan. I don't know the answer to that, but I wrote that down and to get it back. If any student is accessing a building from a direction that creates a problem, meaning there is no ramp, it would help if you'd tell us what that is.
Why are there only certain foods in the C-store? I believe there should be a suggestion box because the students are the ones that have to eat the food.
Well, we currently offer about 3,000 different items in the convenience store, so I'm not sure if that's enough or it, maybe we have it, but it's not the right thing. Again, if there's something that you want, then the best thing to do is to just let us know. If y'all go to the C-store, you know Linda. Linda runs the C-store during the daytime. She's pretty good about getting a list together. If somebody wants a specific item, once a certain number of people sign the list, then she'll order it because we have to meet minimum order requirements to get items in. And if something happens and then somebody doesn't buy them and they expire, then, again, that's product that gets thrown away and, again, causes cost to rise. And you can also, again, utilize our website, our campus dish. If you go to Student Life and click on Food Services, click on Contact Us, shoot me an email with something specific, and we'll get back to you pretty quick on it. But again, anything specific, always let us know. There's always a quick answer. Typically, we can either tell you, yeah, we can bring it in, or no, they don't. Our supplier doesn't offer that, or it's doesn't meet a specific standard for the C-store or something like that.
With the disadvantages and advantages of the tuition freeze, is TWU considering this action? Okay. With the disadvantages and the advantages of a TWU tuition freeze, is TWU considering this action?
All right, I guess that's me. Just so everybody's on the same page, the Texas legislature is in session right now. There are several bills that have been submitted in the legislature that would affect tuition. Some of them are called tuition freeze bills, and even those are different. There are bills that would freeze tuition, meaning stopping any increases in tuition for the next 2 years, for example. There is a different tuition freeze bill that would say whatever your tuition is when you come in as a freshman, it would stay that way for 4 years. That actually sounds better than it is because it sets the tuition at the level of the junior year. So you get 2 years of cheaper tuition and 2 years of more expensive tuition. This is not up to universities to consider. At the moment, these are bills in the Texas legislature, and they may or may not pass a bill that affects tuition. Universities and the university staff are not permitted in Texas to speak for or against a bill. We are state employees, and it's not permitted for someone on the state's payroll to advocate for a bill or against it. What we are doing is advising the local delegation who speaks for us about the pros and cons for TWU for any of these bills, and there's quite a few of them. We're providing information to student government on these bills so that they can speak to them. As students, as consumers, and as voters, you are permitted to speak your opinion, but we are not. And sometimes they ask us for facts and figures. Sometimes they do not when the legislature is in session. And I think whoever asked the question hit it on the head. There are pros and cons for students about these bills, and there are pros and cons for the university. And the simplest way to describe the pros and cons is two-thirds of the cost of your education is coming from the state of Texas and the taxpayer, and one-third is coming from what you pay, whether it's financial aid or out of your pocket or a check from your grandma. That's covering about a third. So if the tuition were frozen, then the state would have to provide more, meaning the taxpayer would have to provide more. And that's the pro and con that's being argued in the legislature right now as we speak. If you would like to know what those are, because, again, they're very different, we're providing that information to student government. It's available online, and I would suggest you take a look at it. We expect some bill like that to pass, but we don't know which one it's going to be.
Thank you. What measures are being taken to keep housing utility costs from increasing? Have simple solutions been considered, such as low-flow faucets, shower heads, or energy-saving lights in appliances?
Okay. We actually have some of those already installed. A few years ago when the university went through an energy efficiency program, we looked at water and we looked at lights. And we did this across campus and as well as in the residence halls. So most of our lighting right now is a much more efficient lighting. And we did put on a slower flow for our showers and our toilets as well in the residence hall. So that's already there. We are looking at, we continuously look at other ways to be able to conserve energy, as well as other areas to help us to become a greener area, whether it's the residence halls or other areas.
Just to add to what Nancy said, when we put this energy management system in, it was a major investment for the university. When we put it in campus-wide, and that system, it's better underground lines, computer-controlled, air conditioning controls, different lighting, everything that was available at the time, and it cut the university's utility bill basically in half. And that's cost that you're paying in many cases. The state pays the utilities for the classroom buildings, and you pay for all the rest. Part of being green in a residence hall is up to residents. If you run the faucet while you go down and have a pizza, we're still going to pay for that water, even though we may be saving water on the faucets and some of those things. But we would like you to know that your university was one of the first in the nation and one of the first in the state to put a system like this in place. It has saved millions, and some of those millions are yours.
I wanted to know if there could be a set way to determine if class could be let out for bad weather. I was in class at 8 p.m., and we knew the rain and hail were supposed to get here by 9, and my teacher didn't let class out. Then we all got hit with hail walking back to the dorms from the science building. That's a good question.
Any kind of university closing is determined by what's occurring at the time. If you've been in Texas very long, you can understand that it can change and get worse or get a lot better real quick. So when the determination is made, it is actually what is occurring at the time in the vast majority of cases. And then that is what is acted on. We, as much as I like Channel 8, I don't trust their weather or anybody else. Their prognostications are not very good sometimes. So we can't just arbitrarily close the university because something may be occurring or may occur later that night or the next day even.
We do have a very elaborate system of making the decision about closing for inclement weather for example, when there's a forecast of snow and ice overnight and we decide to shut the university down for the day, it's much more complex when everybody's already here. Partly that's communication, but partly is, do we dismiss and send everyone out into the inclement weather? There's also the assumption that faculty can use common sense about it once it's underway. And if you're making the assumption that any of us sitting up here can tell the instructor who's already started class to please stop your class, you're probably barking up the wrong tree. But we are very careful when it, for example, closing all night classes because of weather coming, or closing the campus for the day for snow and ice, and we have a system to communicate that. It is harder once it's underway, and is that rain and hail going to get here while the class is underway or just afterwards, and if so, do we send people out into it? John's right. We don't always know that information. We do check with somebody besides the TV stations, but it's a guessing game.
Thank you. Are the commuter student facilities going to be expanded? They're talking about the commuter lounge.
Can you also, explain that?
Yes, if you can elaborate.
Well, I think that ultimately is a facilities question, but there are a few things that are happening, and as several speakers have already shared, you all already know this answer too, space is at a premium. What you may not know behind the scenes is that right now every little inch of space on campus is being looked at with a new magnifying glass to see how we can really provide the very best service for all of you. And you may also not be aware that in MCL, food services is going to be expanding to that area and having a kiosk, and that really came out of needs from commuter students who are in MCL and don't have time to get over to the union, and so I think that'll be a great benefit. But in terms of a lounge specifically, right now there aren't any immediate plans, but just as a reminder, every academic building does have a lounge, and if some of those buildings, they're a little tricky to find, you can always contact our office. Some of them are really nice and some of the best hidden secrets on campus. So I won't go through where all of those are, but call me. You can find us at twcommuter.com, and I can give you more details on that.
Amy's correct. There is one additional piece of information that some of our older buildings, we're using every space we have. As we remodel, Dr. Stewart, our chancellor, has said that each newly remodeled building that does not have a commuter lounge will have one added. The science building, for example, would be next in line. So the planned expansion when we are working on a building is there. It is more difficult in the older buildings. We have times of day when every classroom space we own is in full use. So it's harder to give up some space to create one, but when we remodel, we do that, and that order will continue.
Thank you. What does TW plan to do to make men feel more included on campus? Yeah.
Actually, I feel quite included. Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question without somebody giving me some examples of how that would work or why someone doesn't feel included. I can answer a couple of pieces of how that question might come up. Our name is Texas Woman's University. And sometimes I'm asked, or our people are asked, you know, would it be more inclusive if we change the name? The answer is, first, we're not going to change our name. And secondly, what would we change it to? You know, Northeast Central State University, or, you know, the University of Denton? So assuming that it's not changing the name that makes that, what is the environment like that would make it more welcoming? I think in general we've done a pretty good job of that, but I would be open to suggestions. Ask the guys, you know. One of the things, and any time our students go out in public, and that student group includes at least one male student, they are frequently asked, what's it like to be a man at TW, or how did you get there? Like somehow they got lost on the way to another university. So maybe we need a male advisory board or something that you make us some suggestions. Or maybe that's a good student government question. Mm-hmm. Would somebody, some male student here, take that to the Senate and ask them to... I'm thinking of a male senator or something of that sort. You work on that for me? Yeah, there is a fraternity in the works here. We've had several over the years try that, and we think we're about to get there.
Thank you. Why doesn't TW make the need for a post office box a part of tuition?
Oh, I'd just love to answer that one. The post office is the United States Postal Service. It is not owned by TW. We do not control their hours or the price of postage or the price of a post office box or how they handle that. On the serious side of that, UNT and TW have branch post offices, and we are both struggling to keep those on campus. They are not terribly cost effective, and the post office would like to close ours and close the one at UNT. We are fighting it together. You notice the hours shrank. We all need to go buy some more stamps. You cannot deliver U.S. mail to a non-U.S. post office post box. It has to meet their specifications, and they control it completely.
Thank you. Okay, we have about 5 more minutes left of the forum. Did anybody from the audience want to ask any more questions? We definitely want to get y'all's questions. I could take you in the back. You rose your hand up first. So. No silly questions here. We can't hear you. Can you just stand up? Can you stand up? Thank you.
So I'm a middle semester, and I get to transfer my transcripts every 8 days. And I been told that I'll take about 2 to 3 weeks for your grade if you're on your portal. And I just applied to nursing school, and they assured me that it would scan in, and the nursing advisors would be able to see it. So I was like, okay, that's no problem. But it's been about a month and 3 weeks, and it's still not on my portal. And I guess I would just feel more comfortable if I saw it on my portal. Like, I know they tell me the nursing advisors can see it, but I would feel more comfortable knowing I can see it too, so that everyone can see it. So I was just wondering who I need to speak to so I can get that grade up there.
That would be the Office of Student Records, but I can explain why. You know, TW has a very popular nursing program. Well, every year in January and early February, maybe February 1, maybe the deadline for applying to the nursing program, and many, many hundreds of people apply for that. And because there is a deadline, Student Records has to process all of those applications first. So they did. They told me they had to set aside hundreds of transfer transcripts in order to get that done. So it's a question of limited personnel, but keep checking on it. Check with the Office of Student Records and your advisor.
So if you go by student records and there is any problems other than that, that we're about to get to it, come over to my office and let me have your name and what that is so we can find it.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to have one more question. One more. No, just kidding. Go ahead, right here. You almost made it without a parking question. Almost.
The question was, are there any plans to expand parking on campus? Now, we're building a fitness center where people can go walk. But For those for whom that's not a satisfactory answer, the answer is yes. We took down Reagan Houston Hall, the old residence hall down at the end of Administration Drive, and it is our plan at this time to put parking on all or part of that space. We have not designed it yet because partly there's some groundwork to do. Right at the end of Jones Hall, those of you who don't remember Reagan Houston and all of its glory, but it is gone and there is a big open space there. And we plan to put some additional parking there in the near future.
Thank you so much. I'd first like to start off by thanking everyone in the audience for all of your questions. The questions that that were written out and were not asked today, those are going to still stay with the Student Senate, and we will get those questions answered and post them online on the Student Senate website. And you can access that through Student Life. So just know that. And I also would like to thank the panel so much for coming out tonight. We appreciate this. I know that the students love the opportunity to ask you all these awesome questions. Thank you so much. And there is food and refreshments and cake, chocolate, yummy cake in the back. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming out. Oh, if anyone would like to see the fitness and rec facility, it's up here at the front. Thank you.